everyone, welcome. Port of Esquire Board of Commissioners, meeting in a regular session. We'll call the meeting to order. 4:00 PM. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Hill.
Present.
Commissioner Spence.
Present via Zoom.
Commissioner Rome.
Here.
Commissioner Campbell.
Here.
And Commissioner Stevens.
Here. Please join me for the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We're gonna start off this evening with commission reports. Commissioner Campbell.
I'll hold mine till later.
Very well. Commissioner Rome.
I attended a CEDAR meeting on last Tuesday, and I guess a note, we've talked about in the past the biodigester, which is kind of a county-led effort to try to address multiple parties' concerns and problems, whether it's the breweries or the fish processing facilities. And they were at one point looking to site the facility in Warrenton, and now they're talking about Pacco Seafoods. That might make more sense. Not a lot of an update, but anyway, it's a significant thing. Other than that, it was a good meeting, and it was good to be there.
Thank you. Commissioner Spence.
Yes, my only comment is that I will not be available for the next commission meeting scheduled for 2 weeks from now. I will be picking up my son at PBX, so wish you all well.
Thank you, Commissioner. And Commissioner Hill.
Yes, I was really looking forward to the Christmas party this year, but unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to attend, and I'm wishing everybody has a great time.
That's a disappointment. Anything else?
Pardon me?
That's a disappointment. Is there anything else?
No.
Thank you. Myself, I have nothing significant to report. I would like to note that from the newspaper, that crab fishing has been delayed, as usual. And we mentioned already a couple of times, the port annual celebration this weekend, 5:30, for port staff and commissioners. Be there, aloha. And that's all I have to report. Are there any changes or additions to the agenda? Hearing none, we'll move along for public comment. These are for items on the agenda but not covered by a public hearing. We have no submissions. It's time for our consent calendar, where we can approve with a single vote the minutes, the financials, and the event calendar for recent months. Is there any need to separate anything out of the consent calendar? Okay, we'll move along. All in favor?
I would move that we accept the consent calendar in the present form it's presented to the commission.
Very well, we have a motion.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
The consent calendar is approved. And we're all looking forward to the advisory issue, the adult audit results presentation.
Thank you, Commissioner. So from our auditors, TKW, we have Julie Fahey here to present.
Great. Thank you for having me here this afternoon. I appreciate having this opportunity to be in front of you to talk about this audit. So as Will said, I'm Julie Fahey, an audit partner with Talbot Corolla in Warwick, and I'm here to present the audit results for this last fiscal year. So while this is December, I'm going to talk about the fiscal year June 30, 2024 for the port. So we'll move forward on the slides. Okay, so as usual, we do our audit. We do our audit on site. We were out here two different times. We came out and did interim fieldwork in August. So I have a team out here for a week in August, and then we returned for a week in September for a week of fieldwork. And on site, doing our audit, you know, very invasive, a lot of procedures, a lot of looking at different things, questions asked, different even some federal grants, they did not extend federal expenditures greater than $750,000. So because of that, they were not subject to a single audit this year. But there is a high opportunity going forward that there will be. And then the last item of note there is that there was a restatement in the financial statement. So the only unusual item to note is that there was a restatement, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Okay, moving on. So audit results. So the independent audit report. You have in paper form, you have your financial statements. So I'll direct you to page one, and it's kind of hard to find this because there's lettermen on the bottom of page one. But if you find page two, we've got that. So this is our independent audit report. This is what we issue when we've completed the audit. It is an unmodified clean opinion. So it says essentially that all the procedures that we did throughout the time we were here and all the back and forth, even when we're back in the office, we feel that the financial statements are fairly presented. So it's a good thing. It's what you're looking for when you receive an audit, is you want an unmodified opinion. So, and I will direct you to the first section, the opinion section there, and that talks about that the financial statements are fairly presented. The rest of the independent audit report kind of goes through our responsibilities, your responsibilities, the court's responsibilities, the basis for the opinion being in accordance with GAAP. It talks about different areas of the financial statements. So you have your required supplemental information, which includes your pension and your OPEB schedules. And then it talks about your supplemental information, which is in relation to opinion. And that's where you have your general fund, your budget to actual, and then a couple other fund statements right there as well. Okay, so moving past the independent audit report, on page four, this is your management's discussion and analysis. So whenever I direct readers who don't want to read this entire 49-page document, I always suggest they start with the MD&A. It provides a good overview of the financial statements. And while these financial statements are already in comparative format, so they already have 2024 and they have 2023, the MD&A does provide information for 3 years. So you've covered 24, 23, and 22. Kind of just in summary format, so it kind of gives you a perspective of the changes for the report over a three-year period. Okay, page eight. This is the part that I get excited about. This is the part that we really dig into when we start auditing. This is the statement of net position. So if you were in a company, you would look at this as your balance sheet. So your statement of net position. You have it in comparative format. 24 looks very similar to 23. There were no new GASB statements that were applicable that created any additions to assets or deferred outflows or deferred inflows or liabilities. So everything that you would have seen before as line items are in there, with the addition of just a new receivable that is booked there this year, which is related to the restatement, which I'll talk about. Okay, so moving on to page nine, this is your statement of revenue, expenses, and changes in that position, so your income statement, if you're looking at it. And just note that you had a $798,000 increase to net position, so net income. So after, you know, adding all your revenue, subtracting your expenses, you increased your net position, your equity, by $698,000. Okay, so then I'll let you enjoy the cash flows on your own without digging too much into them. But on page 12, it starts the notes. So I won't go through every page. I know it'd be exciting, but I'm not going to go through every page of the notes. But they do provide a lot of good information. There are really no new note disclosures this year that are different than you would have seen in prior years. But the note disclosures do support everything that's in that statement and that position that you have on page 8. And then past the note disclosures is your RSI. So that's additional information that's just required to be disclosed in GAAP for your pension and your OPEB. And I won't go into too much detail there. The last item that I will draw your attention to is page 48. So it's another one with letterheads, it's a little tricky, but the very, very last page in the financial statement. And so this is our report on compliance and internal control in accordance with Oregon state regulations. So because the Forge is a governmental entity, the state of Oregon asks us to look at certain items in the course of our audit, and we do that. And those are listed on bullet and bullet format on that first page on page 48. If there was any non-compliance, if we had any issues or concerns, or there was something that we found to not be compliant, we would be obligated to report it. There was none. So it, we look at, you know, it talks about there, we look at, you know, budgets and you know, different, you know, investments, purchase contracts, everything. So if there was some type of non-compliance, we would be obligated to report it, them to know. So that's kudos to the court. The second page, on page 49, it talks about if there were any internal control issues. We did have one internal control issue that we did note, a significant deficiency, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. And that's only just related to the statement. Okay? So the next slide. Okay, so any questions on the financial statements themselves before I move into the first letter is our communications to the Charter of Governance, so you serving on the board. There's certain items that we communicate under professional standards to you, and I'll go through that letter. Okay, so this one's a little thicker. You have a one-pager there, but this one's probably like five or so pages. And this is, you've seen it very, you know, it's very similar to what you've seen in years past. But it talks about different items affecting the audit. The first one, it kind of lets you know that there was a new GASB standard this year, GASB 100, for accounting changes and error corrections. So we did apply that with recording and presenting the restatement. So the board had no issues with applying that, you know, appropriately. The second item to know is also we did not identify any significant or unusual transactions. And then it also lets you know about significant estimates. So that's on bullet, you know, it's a bullet format on page 2, but there's a whole bunch of estimates that are actually included within the financial statements. There are no new estimates that are, you know, atypical this year than you wouldn't have seen in prior years. They go through, you know, depreciation, your allowance, you know, related to pension and OPEB, leases, pollution remediation, your normal estimates that you would have. And those are all fully disclosed in the notes in the financial statements. Also happy to report that there were no auditor proposed adjusting journal entries. So that means as a result of the audit, there was nothing that we came across that we felt needed to be changed in the financial statement presentation. So that's a good thing. There were also no uncorrected misstatements. So while we were doing the audit, not only did we not have to post any entries, but there were no entries that we both agreed to not post because they were immaterial. They're just none of those surfaced in the course of the audit. We're also not aware of any consultations that management had with other accountants. The letter also goes on to talk about recently issued GASB standards. So on page 3, there are two new ones. There's always GASB, so Governmental Accounting Standards Board. That is the agency, the body that sets new accounting standards for governments, just like there's GASB in the commercial world. So they're always coming up with new accounting standards for governments to adopt. There are two on the horizon. They will be applicable for next year. Management will do a really good job of assessing their applicability to the courts and will report them as necessary and make any adjustments. But just letting you know, there's two on the horizon. One being compensated absences, and the next one being certain risk disclosures. Then the letter also goes over independence. It just talks about, there's a big push by the ASCBA, it just talks about independence for our independence and your independence as we conduct the audit. And then, of course, the management representation letter is attached as well. So I have one more item that I'll get to, which is the internal control letter. But are there any questions on this document so far yet? Okay, so then we have one more letter. This is just an internal control letter. So it's related to the restatement. So finance personnel, this is not actually a result of the audit, but finance personnel discovered that there was income that was earned in prior years and that needed to be recorded. And so because of that, it caused a restatement and it recorded the income that was earned in prior years, which adjusts beginning that position. And then this year, you have a receivable, and also for last year, as you're collecting on that income. So all is appropriate and appropriately recorded with this. Okay, so before I conclude, I would like to express my appreciation to Finance, to Melanie and her team. She does a fabulous job. It's a lot of work. We go through a lot of revisions. There's a lot of questions, a lot of back and forth. Very supportive of the audit. And absolutely Will's support as well, his leadership and his support of the financial statements and reading them and supporting the audit process as well. Okay, any questions on that before? I believe there's a corrective action plan that will be approved. It is a clean.
Questions? Anyone? I'd like to make this leap, but your comment that you discovered this mistake that was made.
Finance.
It was pointed out by the board.
The board,
yeah,
the board.
I'd just like the people to know that.
Yes.
Our public sitting here. Thank you.
Yes, the board.
And I appreciate that, Melanie and Will.
I'll just make note, so the commission has a copy of the corrective action plan. It should be on the board letterhead. It's a single page document. So that's just in response to the finding from the audit, and we would just ask that the commission make a motion to approve the corrective action plan, which will be submitted to the Secretary of State for compliance.
You want us to vote on this today, Director?
Sure, that's fine. If there are issues or questions, we can probably answer those now, but I don't see any reason to move this to another meeting.
Mr. Chairman,
sure.
I move we approve and send the letter plan of action to the Port of Astoria to the Oregon Secretary of State for the Chairman's Commission signature and the Executive Director's signature.
I'll second it. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All in favor say aye, please.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, you have your address. Thank you very much. We have a few action items to deal with. First is our ferry plumbing proposal. Director Eisen.
Thank you, Commissioner. This action item is a follow-up to the advisory item and presentation we had at our last meeting in attendance. We have Mike Oyen representing Terry's Plumbing, as well as Mark Popkin from Popkin Real Estate. Included with the paperwork you have in front of you is a draft of the proposed sales agreement, as well as some numbers in terms of, I think, 5 years on rental income from the facilities in question, a one-year average, the proposed sale price for your reference on this. And so if the commission wishes to proceed with this transaction, the motion that we would be asking for is for the commission to authorize the executive director to execute this transaction at a sales price not to go lower than the proposal of $950,000.
Any further testimony?
Well, I'd like to say something.
Well, we need a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move we authorize the executive director to execute the agreement between the Port of Astoria and Mike Wynn for an amount not to be below $950,000.
Very good. Do I hear a second?
Second.
We have time for discussion. Would you go ahead, Commissioner Campbell?
I'm opposed to this because, and I'll tell you why, I've been around here quite a while, and we've been through this before, and there's about six pieces of their property that we have sold, and it didn't turn out at all good. And I think we're better off to hang on the property. We're out of it with everything we've got going on now with the marina and the new hotels, restaurants, and whatever we got to do. We do not have enough parking. And I think that we're better off to keep the land, and it's just not a the best use for the taxpayer's money to continue to sell these. And I can tell you that, I'll give you an example. The property across the bridge where the mall is, the Primark and the drugstore and everything, the port practically gave that away. hospital, the hotel, and that separate piece of property, which is above that, and right now, we're out of parking up there. There's not enough parking somewhere when fishing's going on to park everything. People are parking in the baseball field and everything else, so. Then another thing is that happened, the seafood lab had to relocate from the location on Young's Bay, the old PPNL well, the property. So for a dollar, we gave them the piece of property at East End Basin to build a seafood lab. Well, then they decided to pull out of there and rebuild somewhere else. And unfortunately, our attorney did not put the clause in there, which would turn it back to the port in the event they left. So now they want to charge us $600,000 for that piece of property that we gave them for a dollar. And then another thing that happened, we had a Saturday morning sale here, right over here on the corner, and they sold the property over there for $50,000, a half a block. It was a giveaway. And that was probably our only chance to widen that road coming into the port, because trucks just have a very difficult time now getting in here and turning around to get their product. So then, therefore, I am opposed to this. I don't think we should sell him over here. We have it to sell. We're going to need what we got.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Rowe?
Yeah, we're talking about $950,000, which is a considerable improvement over dollars. So I think those resources could be very helpful for the port as we move forward. I understand the cases that were made, and each case, I believe, is its own individual case with its own set of circumstances. I don't dispute anything that Commissioner Campbell said in those examples, but I would, to me, this particular instance, we're removed away from the water. We're on the south side of the railroad tracks. If it was adjacent to the water, I would be opposed to it. If there was somebody wanting to buy property over here, I would, on the water, I would absolutely be opposed to it, because I think that's part of the port's mission. I don't believe necessarily being an arbitrary landlord is necessarily in the port's best interest. And I guess my historical example was I was on the county commission. I voted on the county commission to allow the port to use county resources for the port to manage the Tongue Point. And 10 years later, nothing happened. And I was amongst most of this group when we decided to let that lease go, and now we've seen extraordinary progress and different resources brought in from outside of the area. I think Tongue Point is considered to be a success. My point ultimately is economic development doesn't necessarily have to have the port's letterhead on it to be a success, and I think that's what I would look at this as an established business who wants to invest resources into this area, into this property, where I don't think the port would be able to match the amount of investment that a business owner is willing to invest into that property. So it's in the best and highest use, I believe, and supporting economic development in Astoria, adjacent to the port, to support the sale of this property. I could go on, but I think I'll defer to other commissioners.
Thank you. Yeah.
Well, then, rebutting that, too.
You know, we got everybody else get a chance to speak, sir. And then you can rebut.
Okay.
Commissioner Smith. Can you wake him up and ask him for comments? Is he frozen?
No, no, he's frozen. Can you hear?
Commissioner Spence?
I don't have any questions for you.
Do you wish to weigh in on the topic of discussion?
The question of what? what?
Sale of Terry's Plumbing. Sale of the land for Terry's Plumbing. That's the action item A.
Of the price, I would say yes.
Very well, thank you. Commissioner Hill?
Yes, I respect and appreciate Mr. Campbell's perspectives on past troubles. I think each situation can certainly be their own set of circumstances. I also appreciate Mr. Rohn's opinions on this, and I feel very strongly that Terry's Plumbing is the type of business, it was very much like our business when we started and grew a little bit, and it's the type of business I think we need to support in this town. Is it going to be a situation like the other ones Jim explained? I don't think so. It's certainly unique as a small business, and I support it wholeheartedly. I remember when our business first started, I approached the port, and we had backing from, unfortunately it was a foreign entity, but we had backing, and I requested consideration for leasing some property near the port, and we were quickly rejected by the commission. And you know, I had, that was not hard feelings or anything, but it was a surprise that it was just no consideration at all, except for the fact that we were really young. And I just don't think that Terry's Plumbing deserves that type of a treatment. So I'm all in favor of this particular sale.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Campbell.
Well, keep in mind that this is basically a lease-based port. We got more leases than you can take a pick at. What do we got, 700 leases?
Well, I don't know the total number of leases. It's probably a little less than that. I think at one point we had right around 500 unique customers. Or if you consider all of our storage, mortgage agreements, it's probably in that 500 to 600 number.
So it's supported pretty well by leasing the properties that we've got here with all the buildings. We're tied up for years and years. We won't see the ends of those leases. But anyway, there's other places that I think we could put him, and we'd be glad to set him up at the airport. We've got an industrial park out there that's pretty centralized, but apparently he doesn't want to go anywhere but here, so I don't know.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Campbell has spoken twice, so other commissioners will have the opportunity to speak one more time if we want. Mr. Rowe?
I don't have anything to add at this time.
Mr. Spence, anything else? Mr. Hill?
No.
Peace. Thank you. We have heard some valid considerations from our commissioners and are well stated. This is a difficult subject for me in principle. I don't like selling land. It just seems like we ought to hang on to what we got. We don't know what the future holds. We don't know when that land just might jump high in value if we carry out some of our plans and dreams for the fishing village, the marina village. I want to say, however, in this case, we have an Astoria family business. is homeboarded right here in Astoria and wants to stay. And I hope you really intend that. We will have a good partner in a relationship with a neighbor if we sell this property to him. That's the way I see it. I'm ready to end the discussion and call for a vote. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Hill.
Yes.
Commissioner Spence.
Yes.
Commissioner Roan.
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell.
No.
And Commissioner Stevens.
Yes. 4-1.
Correct.
Motion passes. Congratulations. We're going to move on to action item B, SLR, International Byproduct Recovery Center Feasibility Study Agreement.
Congratulations. I'm going to take that one, Commissioner. It's harking back to the meeting in September 17th. We brought to the Commission for approval on the Byproduct Recovery Center Grant Agreement with Business Oregon. So the grant agreement is going to cover $60,000 of the $80,000 of feasibility study being conducted on the south end of Pier 2. So what this is the $80,000 agreement for SLR. So this is the company with Steve Hammer that is doing the feasibility study. So what we need tonight from the commission is a bit of a retroactive approval to get this signed and in place so that we have all the documentation needed so that we can get Steve and his folks paid. I will open it up to questions.
We're not putting out a blank check here, boy. There's some pretty stiff salary there. No.
$80,000 for the feasibility study, which is going to cover all of the things that are encapsulated in the Business Oregon agreement. One of those is the constructability, the permitting abilities, the quality of the wastewater that's going to be moving back and forth between the processors, and where it's going to be located, the design of the building, all of those types of things. And remembering that Business Oregon is covering $60,000 of this $80,000.
Where's this money coming from?
The $20,000 extra that will be
Then, all of it at the end of the day.
You just said Business Oregon is paying $60,000.
How much?
$60,000.
So they're paying 60 and we're paying 20.
Correct.
And important to note on this also, this actually came before the commission a couple months ago where we approved the grant agreement. We outlined in there that it was SLR we were moving forward with. Unfortunately, our auditor left, but this is sort of proving to them that we're really dotting our I's and crossing our T's, because technically, even though we said it was SLR and even though we approved the grant, we didn't approve the actual contract because we didn't have it yet. So the commission has already approved the fact we're moving forward with this. This is just to make sure that, from a compliance perspective, that the actual contract is approved.
Thank you for that. I think that's a good idea.
I turned that into a motion, if I may.
Yes, sir.
So we'll call that a motion, the agreement with the professional service agreement with the contract with SLR. I'll formalize that.
We have a motion. Second. Motion and a second. Discussion.
Is this something that we're going to have personnel manning? Are we going to have expensive manning it, or what's the deal there?
That is the intent. The intent would be that the port, once this is constructed, that the port would man this.
So what is that, sir? That's forever.
Correct.
We're still talking about, at this stage, development of a concept. Is that not correct?
Correct.
Okay, we're working on two different things at once. There's the feasibility side, and then the treatability side, and then the intent would be, I mean, the port is not going to have this be a cost center. The idea would be that we would get reimbursement through those entities that are benefiting from this byproduct recovery center.
And it's more efficient for the entities to work through the port, is that correct?
Especially when it comes to the permitting process, that everything will be under one port permit. That again, we would pass those costs on to the users rather than, like with the seafood processors, having to permit individually. We would get a little bit of some economies of scale here. And so it would be of benefit, I think, in general, something that would be supported by DEQ. I mean, they want to see that this will work, but this would be a longer-term solution, as right now our two large Pier 2 customers are both struggling with compliance issues when it comes to permitting and for treating water. And so this would be kind of a full solution for all of the issues, and we think would be the most efficient long-term, and obviously the processors are very supportive of this.
Is this going to be an on-deck plant out there on Pier 2 or what?
It will be on the south end of Pier 2.
So that's going to wipe out some more parking. And
we've already agreed to this. We just haven't formalized the agreement. But I think it's an example of the port being able to help support its tenants and clients and develop economic activity in the long term. And I think that the director's trip to Denmark shows how industry and government can work together to create a positive outcome, so I'm looking at it as that.
Further discussion?
No.
Well, I certainly agree that we should go forward, and I hope in your executing of a concept at some point for the work that we will do, we'll charge a little bit for it, I hope. Okay, that's far your idea too. Good. I just want to dovetail that in there as a comment. We have a motion. We have a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? We have a unanimous vote. Actually, item C, a public meeting policy. We already have public meeting policies, but you know, just because we should have it in writing. Mr. Director.
So we do have public meeting policies. So if you've read through the bylaws recently, you probably recognize a lot of the language in this document. There are a few changes that I think Melanie's going to discuss real quick. But the idea here is to serve a couple purposes. To have a standalone meeting policies, you know, this is an area where laws often change. We saw that a lot even through COVID, where there were new laws around public meetings. And by having a standalone policy that our bylaws can then reference when there are changes, we don't have to change our bylaws. And then the second piece of this is that our insurance program, as an addition to their discount program that they offer, is now offering a 2% discount on insurance rates if an entity has a standalone meeting policy. And so by getting this approved tonight, we will satisfy that requirement and get the corresponding reduction in our insurance rate. So, Mel, did you have anything to add as far as specific changes you wanted to talk about?
No, not necessarily. It's just the way that the policy reads is that if there's a section that is just repeating what's in the bylaws, it just refers to that particular section of the bylaws. You'll see there are some sections that don't have a bylaw reference, and that was because they were added. And it comes from a template provided by SDAO for public meeting policies, and it just gets us in compliance with all of the new laws. Specifically for, if you'll flip to the back of the document, virtual attendance was added, so that's the fact that the court is obligated to have an option for the public to attend meetings virtually, and so that is not provided in our policy.
Very good. If there's no questions for the director, then we will need a motion. Anyone?
Is this the corrected version or is this something we just brought forward?
What's that?
Is this a corrected?
So it's a new, the ports, we currently don't have a standalone public meeting policy. So this is a a new policy for us, but much of the language is pulled directly from our bylaws, so it exists somewhere, but now it will be its own policy with the additions that Melanie discussed.
And I would point out that in the introduction of the policy, it does say where a specific provision in this policy conflicts with the provision of the bylaws shall prevail. So nothing that we're going to agree to today will override what's already been approved in the bylaws.
I move we approve the Port of Astoria meeting policies as presented.
We have a second.
I'll second.
Further discussion?
So this is not the result of any behavior or lack thereof of what commission this is.
No, I'm trying to save some money is really what it's about.
Well, not only that, I think it's pretty great that in doing this extract from the bylaws, if we need to change any of this, if I'm reading this right, we can do it by a simple vote, not needing a 4-1 by the commission to change bylaws.
Correct. And what we will likely do, because we don't revise the bylaws very often,
correct,
but at our next revision, we can take out some of the language in the bylaws and just reference our policy to avoid those conflicts that were discussed, especially if there's law changes, where we can just amend this policy, get it approved, and the bylaws get left alone.
And we get a cut-in cost on our insurance.
2%
is a win-win.
Yep.
We're making money right now.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We have unanimous approval of the public meeting policies. Our next item is public comment. This is for public comment on non-agenda items. Do we have any submissions? Hearing none, it is time for the executive director's comments. Okay. Director Eisen.
You going to comment on this?
Yep, I'll comment on that. I just have kind of two updates to give for the commission. The first one, about a week and a half ago, Matt and I met with a gentleman named Wes Cochran, and he represented the EDA, the Economic Development Administration, and he's part of a program that offers several different grants. And they tend to do those by region. And our region has not been a recipient recently of any of those grant monies. And so through coordination and actually attending the meeting, we had Melanie Olson from Business Oregon as well as Sarah Lou Heath, who's the director of COLPAC. They were involved as well to kind of talk about the various projects we have at the port, the various needs, and how those might align with the grant programs through EDA. And it was interesting, we had come with, to talk through several projects, including Pier 2, Byproduct Recovery Center, Boatyard. And it seemed like in that meeting, the area that sort of perked his interest the most, and he thought really aligned with a lot of the things they're looking for in terms of grants, was the Byproduct Recovery Center. So we actually went out and did a quick tour. Weather wasn't super great that day, but we went out on a Pier 2 to kind of show them the lay of the land out there. And kind of going back to our discussion earlier with the SLR contract for the Byproduct Recovery Center, one of the benefits of having this coordinated through the ports is the port's ability to go obtain grants that may or may not be available to some of our customers. And so the grant amounts vary. I think he said the sweet spot for most of their grants is kind of in that $2 to $4 million range, which would be helpful for this project. So it was a good meeting, a good chance to connect. He actually, even though he works for the federal agency, he's located in Hillsboro, so he's not real far away. But it was, Business Oregon was very supportive, as Melanie always is. She's an exceptional regional representative for our area and really a voice for us at the state. So I appreciate her helping coordinate that, and then Sarah Lou being in attendance as well. And so it's something that we do plan to pursue. Shane Jensen had called in as well to listen into the meeting. But our plan is to move forward. And these EDA grants too tend to take some time. He said that, typically on your first submittal, you get denied, and then you get feedback on that. And then it's more likely that on your second or third application, that you would get awarded. So from a timing perspective, this may make sense where if we, you know, first apply here soon, maybe get a denial, then in the next year or two, that we would be in a much better position to get some grant money to help us potentially with the development of that facility. So I think that was a beneficial meeting, and a lot of good information he had presented, and kind of some tricks of the trade, per se, in order to put yourself in a good position to get awarded based on kind of the parameters that they tend to grade on. And then the other thing I'll mention, and you have a copy of it in front of you, but staff drafted a letter that we are sending to DSL regarding our application for mitigation for the Pier 2 project. So I know I talked to some of the commission, but for the full commission, we did submit permits last week to the city of Warrenton for our mitigation plan. We actually submitted two permits, one for our original site that we had initially proposed, and we've also submitted a second permit as kind of a plan B in more of a general area, and that's why we are approaching DSL to try to get some help, because we would need to purchase some property on the alternative site from DSL in order to make the mitigation work. And so for your reference, I handed out a copy of the letter. And so we're going to kind of be going forward with a plan A and a plan B. From a timing perspective, it was important that we got those applications in last week, because as of December 1, the new regulations in regards to the FEMA buyout take effect. And so by getting that application in last week, we fall under the old set of criteria. And so we continue to work multiple avenues in order to get this mitigation plan approved, and we're hopeful in working with the city of Warrenton that we can get this resolved hopefully in short order, so that we can move forward with the rest of the permit process. So I guess that concludes my comments.
Will, do you feel there's any movement from the Warrenton end?
I think they desire to get a resolution, and I think we'll ultimately get there, whether that's on our primary site or the alternative, I don't know. I think from the port's perspective, we really would like to do this on our own property, on the original proposal, because we think it's the best site, and also it's going to, you know, limit costs, not having to purchase the land as well. It's kind of seems like a little bit of an odd scenario, in that we're, you know, trying to do this project to repair our Pier 2 facility. In order to do that, to build a new seawall, we have to purchase that land from DSL, where the new seawall is going to be, and then mitigate for it. And then potentially in that mitigation process, we got to purchase more land from DSL to then mitigate on. So it's like we're sort of getting hit over and over with these costs. And we're simply trying to repair our Pier 2 facility. And so, you know, we understand that we have to follow the rules, and we think that there is a solution. The big thing for us is timing, because, you know, this is holding up us moving forward with our permitting and with our in-water work windows. If this doesn't get resolved soon, it's going to push back construction, which is, you know, only going to cost more and more. And so we would like to get a resolution to this as soon as we can.
Is that DSL property on the Skipton on there?
Yeah, it's north of our original proposed site.
Is that what they ended up taking away from us? Anybody ever figure out why? How they got that land back that was ours?
Are you talking about the land grab that
you
referenced several times?
No, not 73 land. I'm talking about the last administration here. And Garrett, all of a sudden, a big portion of that Skipton on the outer end, I think it was, disappeared and went back into the state land board for some reason. Nobody can find a paper trail to figure out why.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
And this, we're talking about, we're going to buy back from them.
Potentially, yes.
That's our property.
Well, I mean,
theoretically.
If we were spitballing a little bit, but if we did able to work with DSL, then maybe we could sell our property.
Do what?
workshop session, December 17th, 4 p.m., regular session, January 7th. It says 2024, my time machine is inoperative right now, so that'll be 25.